Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Bills rookie defensive end Greg Rousseau was awarded the AFC Defensive Player of the Week today. He had five tackles, a sack, and an interception in Sunday night's win over the Kansas City Chiefs. This is the third week in a row that a Bills player has received weekly honors, the other two players being Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds. A look around the league now, the Giants were without two key pieces of their offense today as Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley didn't practice today. Barkley with an ankle injury and Jones with a concussion. Chiefs star wide receiver Tyreek Hill did not practice today due to what the team is calling a quad contusion. And finally, Joe Mixon was not practicing today after having a reduced role in Sunday's game. The running back has been battling an ankle sprain for a couple of weeks now, but is hopeful for a full return in Week 6. In hockey news, Buffalo Sabres forward Drake Caggiula was back on the ice today after leaving practice early after an awkward collision and is expected to be okay for tomorrow night's home opener. That's your Paddock Chevrolet Sports Update. Go to paddockchevrolet.com for the best in pre-owned inventory. I'm Josh Schmidt for WGR Sports Radio 550.
It's Mike Shope.
You might be mocking me or you might be staunchly agreeing with me. I can't tell.
I'm mocking you.
And the Bulldog.
What is Fozzie Bear's role in this production?
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
That still hurts. That guy. That comment still hurts. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. Thanks for being with us. Joining us now on the West Her Hotline is author Seth Wickersham, senior writer at ESPN. His new book, It's Better to Be Feared, on the Patriots dynasty has been making waves, and it is now out for sale. Seth, Mike and Chris here. Thanks for your time.
Hey, great to be with you guys.
You're from Anchorage, I found out today.
Yes.
Is that the conversation starter that I want it to be? I don't know if it is. But
I don't know. You know, I guess you know some people. Some people find it very interesting. Others not at all. But honestly, you know, growing up in Anchorage, it kind of reminded me of Buffalo a little bit, just with more mountains, but some more weather.
Yeah. Well, that's good. So a lot of people are talking about this book, of course, Seth, and have been since news of it broke. What has been your reaction to the reaction so far?
I don't know. I just answer the question.
Okay.
I mean, I'm pleased with the reaction it's gotten, and I spent a long time on the book, and it, in some ways it's like two decades in the making. I was hired at ESPN Magazine when I graduated from college, and one of my very first stories was when my editor sent me to Foxborough, Massachusetts to interview the backup quarterback for the New England Patriots, who had been starting for a month and played pretty well, this guy Tom Brady. And I will never forget, it was at the old Foxborough Stadium. I don't know if you guys remember it, but it's like a high school field.
And, yeah, Mike's going to be 50 in a couple weeks, and I'm well into
okay.
my 50s.
We both
I go back to Schaefer Stadium there in Foxborough.
We've been to games there, yeah.
Yeah. And so we met, and Brady was wearing like a gray sweatsuit, and he had a backpack that was full of beer because he had lost a Michigan State bet. And I remember at one point in our conversation, he said, "You know, football's always come really easy to me," and at the time I was like, "Well, who says that? It's ridiculous, whatever." And now you look back on it 20 years later, and that's a pretty prescient comment he made.
For sure.
Did that comment make it into that first story, Seth?
It did. Yeah, it did.
Yeah. Because someone that knew, like your reaction to it, I bet readers would have thought the same thing. Like, who is this guy?
Yeah, it's just, it wasn't something that I, you know, granted I hadn't like done that many stories. I was still pretty green, but it just wasn't something that I expected him to say. And, you know, as it turns out, he knew himself better than any of us knew him.
I had heard the comment the other day. I think when I heard it was seeing your tweet about it, where Belichick kind of disowned having spoken with you or knowing you almost. And you're like, well, that was bizarre for him to do because, of course, he's spoken to me. And this, here's a list of times when he did. What? So that's some evidence of his feelings here. What about Brady? Do you know, like, where he's at in his life, having moved on? Like, have you communicated with him about this or anything? Or where does that stand?
He knew I was working on the book. I haven't talked to him for a while, but, you know, I was very clear that, you know, Robert Kraft, Tom Brady, and Bill Belichick didn't cooperate specifically for the book. But I've talked to them many times over the years, and I felt like I had, like, a good amount of material that I could just draw upon that had never been out there. And then also, you know, just as a reporter, been an investigative reporter at ESPN for a long time, I just felt like that I could, you know, call people and meet with people and understand and, you know, do my best to understand, you know, what makes these guys so great and what some of the costs of that greatness are.
So what do you come away with? Like what are some things you can share with us that made them so great?
Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, but let's start with Brady, for instance. And I think that, you know, one of the most interesting transitions that Brady made was going from the kid who was kind of cocky and, as he said, a whiner, to this kind of hardened man who was ready for life in the NFL. And one of the pivotal moments in his career and probably his life was when he was at Michigan, and he was buried on the depth chart, as we all know. And he told Lloyd Carr, the head coach, that he was going to transfer to Cal. And that night, he met with Greg Hardin, who was his counselor, a counselor he had been assigned to. And he tells, you know, he's kind of whining to Greg Hardin about how he can't get on the field. And finally, Greg, and this is only the way that he could react. He doesn't react by giving Brady a hug or even by applying kind of tough love. Instead, he laughs at him. He laughed at Tom Brady during one of the most kind of vulnerable moments of his life. And he says, you want to leave? Go ahead. You haven't done bleep here anyway. And if you leave, no one's going to care. And it was really kind of an interesting crossroads for Brady there, because if he had gone to Cal, he probably would have gotten on the field faster and had a fine career. And he never would have become Tom Brady. But instead, you know, those words kind of reignited his competitive spirit. The next morning, he tells Lloyd Carr, I'm staying at Michigan, and I'm going to prove to you that I'm the best quarterback at the team. There's a lot of moments like that that are kind of more in retrospect, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. With Seth Wickersham here on WGR, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog. Seth, in Buffalo, we've just kind of figured out now or just moved on from the Patriots, you know, having their thumb on us for so many years. And now we're enjoying their struggles here as the Bills have kind of taken their place, if you will. And with Belichick, so it's just interesting to me that he's still doing it. As much as they've won, Brady goes, he easily could have just moved on at that moment or any other moment, I suppose. But here he is now. Now he's got a new first-round pick quarterback, and I guess he wants to see that through. What do you think, like if you have a prediction on his future, great. What is it that's particularly driving him? Is it like, I don't have anything else? Or do you think it's more just like, you know, I want to prove myself, or just, you know, something else?
Well, we spend so much time talking about the differences between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, and there's a lot of them. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of them. But I think that one of the things they have in common is they have this, you know, cliched fire within them, but they have this like internal drive and need and compulsion almost to do this. And yeah, they could have each exited, you know, many times with their legacy and their health and plenty of money. And instead they just keep going. And it's clearly not about retiring on top, you know, like they could have been John Elway or any of these guys a long time ago and walked, you know, Tony Dungy when he walked away with a Lombardi. And it's one of the reasons why I, like, remember that moment, you know, last year after the Super Bowl, Brady wins the Super Bowl with the Bucs, and Gisele Bündchen runs up to him and she says, well, what more do you have to prove? And he finds a way to change the subject. Because the Super Bowls for these guys are almost like this weird byproduct of this obsession that they have and this need to do this. It reminds me a lot of, you know, you see a musician who is practicing and well into their 70s where they feel, you know, it's like that mix of adrenaline and need and ego and all of this stuff, nothing makes them feel more alive than performing. And it's one of the reasons why in the book I looked at Belichick and Brady as characters that evolved over time rather than making the Super Bowls huge moments. Because, you know, as we've noticed, I mean, there's no amount of championships that are too much for these guys. They keep going regardless almost of how the season ends because they have to.
Very good. I know you're short on time, Seth. I just want to say I read Chad Finn's review. I haven't seen the book yet myself, but I read Chad Finn's review in The Globe. And he points out how you write fans are, you know, then talk show hosts are rung up from fans. But he writes he would put talk show hosts at the bottom when it comes to...
You know, I'm catching a lot of that from you guys. And I didn't mean it that way. It's one of those things. I think in the subsequent edition, I'll have to tweak that a little bit. I mean, some talk show hosts. I was on Jim Rome yesterday. He made sure to point that out. And
sorry.
You know, it's not one of those things, but it was meant to sort of show, you know, we're talking about what makes these guys great. One of the things with Belichick is that he, for someone who's as socially awkward and introverted as he is, he understands the psychology of his opponents better than almost any coach in NFL history, and he figures out ways to get inside their head, knowing that when they react a certain way under stress, they will kind of revert to their most essential self, and that's when he's got them trapped. And he does it all the time to people. And when I wrote that, that was an example of when he did it to Mike Shanahan in Denver. And you know, he handed Mike Shanahan a surprising loss that haunted Mike Shanahan for years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I won't mention it next time. I'm sorry. I really wanted to maybe get it to Chad Finn because he put the very bottom. I mean, that's damning. Okay. Congratulations on your success, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you, guys.
Seth Wickersham of ESPN, It's Better to Be Feared is the name of the book on the Patriots. Maybe you'd be in the mood for that, given that the Patriots have fallen, and here are the Bills, just, you know, top of the heap.
Oh, that's going to be in stockings all over Western New York, or just Bills fan, I would think. I mean, I would think a deep dive on them, you know, their rise and their fall, you know, would be a must read for Bills fans. I definitely want to read the book myself.
And it is now available nationwide, so you can get it. How about you mentioning my birthday?
Well, you know, I just wanted the man to know, you know, that we remember the you know, the OG stadium in Foxborough. That's all.
And you went to a game there. I was right about that, right?
Oh yeah, I went 2 years in a row. The 2 years that I was away during football season, I went to game. So 80.
I was there 89.
88 and 89 were the years that I would have gone to games.
I might have sat next to you. Who knows?
Or maybe 90. You know what? I cannot. Now I'm not. I'm not positive now because I was there through the 90 season. I was living in New Haven for the Super Bowl in 90. Maybe I wasn't there for the 88 season. So maybe 88. No, I was there for 88. No, man,
88. Now it's a long time ago, so no pressure. 88 was week 3, and the Bills were 2-0. And like we're just, this was like for me, I'm 15 and, or 16. I got to get that right now that we're so specific on my age. I was 16 and like maybe they can do it. Maybe this is the year where they can win the division. And they started 2-0 at home and then went to New England. And it was a struggle, but Norwood won the game for them. Right at the, he kicked a field 16-14 maybe or 17-16. He kicked a field goal right at the end and they beat New England. And, like, winning on the road seemed like a big deal. I mean, just 2 years before, they had this long streak of games, like 20 or some games, where they had lost every time on the road anywhere. And so now they were like, are they good? Are they good? Are they good? And that was, like, a key win, I thought, at that time. 89, and I'm there in 89 with some college friends, freshmen in college. So I think I was still 17 or just turned 18. And they lost. That was gross. It was a later game, and it was freezing, and we're in the upper corner, and just, come on. That was a trying year. I don't know, 90. They probably won, but I don't know that game.
Yeah, I don't – yeah. It sounds right. I mean, the 88 and 89 part sounds right now.
All right.
Because I remember it being really nice one time and really lousy the other, and I remember being there for a loss. So that might line up.
Yep.
But yeah, two different times. One of the times, I don't know if you might remember this. I've told this maybe once or twice, but you know, New Haven to Boston, New Haven to Foxborough, is I don't know, 2.5, 3 tops. You know, it's not a super long drive, but it's not nothing either. So it's a couple hours easy. And we might have been halfway there one of the times when I realized that the tickets were still on the refrigerator.
Uh-oh.
Under a magnet.
Uh-oh.
And, this is the late 80s, so, there was no digital option. There was like, okay, I'm halfway to Boston. It's whatever. I think we were going with plenty of time to meet up with friends and stuff. So we made it in time for the game. But all our pregame plans were scuttled because we had to burn basically an hour and a half turning around, driving back, and then heading back out.
Ouch!
But we made it for the game. But that was a tough one. Well, when I realized sitting there in the driver's seat, like, this is something that contributes, I think, to me being insane about where my stuff is. Like when I'm getting ready to go somewhere, I need all my stuff where it normally is, and I just, because I don't want to forget anything, and I think this is a reason why.
That particular story.
I did this one time. Yes, mm-hmm, that particular mm-hmm. time that I left those tickets. Like, I'm kind of manic about, does everybody have everything? What I mean? Like, when we were going back and forth to camp, you have your Nexus cards? Do we have everything? Or really, forget, I wouldn't even leave it up to anybody. Like, give me them. Like, I want them. Here they are. We've got them. I've got them. We're set. And there's no chance that anyone's going to screw this up.
You're the captain now.
Right. I'm in charge. And it's because of those tickets left under a magnet on the refrigerator.
Yeah, that is really something that does date you. Forgetting the tickets is a thing. Yeah. Like, that's not a thing anymore, is it? Like, forgetting the tickets, it can be.
No, no.
But I think even from my kids' school plays and things, the tickets are on my phone. Like, there's not an actual ticket. So, yep, that was a fun trip. And how many Bills road? This is a big week to talk about Bills road games because it's Nashville week,
mm-hmm.
where like everybody, this is the game. I think now this is the game you go to on the road. It's a big moment to think that Tennessee will be on the schedule in a given season, so that thousands of people here can plan their trips to Nashville and just take over,
right?
Which has got to be
Sneaky Joe.
Right. Joe's already there. Like, he's there. Right. He's not going to. Hopefully, he didn't forget anything because he's there 4-5 days in advance.
Right.
Hopefully, he doesn't have to fly back. So, Bills road games. That's such a great memories and such a great way to celebrate them. Even when they're bad, I think it is. Even when they were bad, I think, like, to show, it's just such a pride thing to go on the road. You saw that in Arrowhead, you saw like the sea of red, but specks of blue. This had to be like Allen jerseys and Bills jerseys, one out of every 100 or so people. You just see that little blue speck in the crowd. How cool.
Right.
How cool to be able to represent
that
on your own, kind of like, you're just surrounded.
Right, I mean, to do that, like, going to Kansas City is a whole different thing than going to Nashville. I think, like, from what I heard Sal talking again, and he's talked with us many times about it. Of course, not last year because of the pandemic, but the time before that the Bills were in Nashville, like the images from that game, the fans walking across that bridge to the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looked like suddenly, wait, where's the bridge in Orchard Park that people are walking to the stadium over a river? Where are we? Like, it was just a sea of Bills fans. And, I mean, what a scene. I mean, that and the Jacksonville playoff game are the two that stand out the most to me. Like, that's not to downgrade any other great experiences that many, many fans have had at other venues, but the two times that it was most noticeable or stood out the most to me were those two events. The game in Nashville a couple years ago and that playoff game in 17 was massive.
Last year kind of got screwed up. I mean, I know a lot of people made it, but just with the limited crowds and the way that game was rescheduled, just kind of was unfortunate. But now we're back. Yeah. I went to the game in Foxborough and then the same season, Cleveland, for the playoffs. And I think that's it for me with the Bills. It's a long time ago. But
yeah,
that Cleveland game was just spectacular. Just amazing. They lost, which was crushing in the playoffs, but what an amazing game. Best game I've ever seen in person, at least, if not period. 34-30. Ronnie Harmon. That's what I'm talking about. If it's if you don't know. That day just feels so good. It feels so good. You know, being in the home crowd is one thing. Everybody's together and celebrating and enjoying the game. Being on the road is different, and you just sort of represent. I mean, it's just got to be so cool. And, you know, Nashville, 2 years ago, Nashville is the one I think of, too, more than last year, as I said. And it's my sister, who I assume is going again. She's always taking these trips. And she's texting me on Saturday night. Remember this? Mm-hmm. Allen was hurt. Like, he had a head injury the week before. Is it the New England game the week before? But whatever game it is, like, it's not known whether he'll play against Tennessee. And on a Saturday, game's on Sunday, of course. Saturday night, I get a text from her. Do you know if Allen is playing tomorrow? And I get these kind of texts from my family sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, do I know the inside? And I never do.
Sean McDermott tell you if Allen's playing?
Yeah, I never know any of that. Ever. Nope. I'm not in touch with those people that would tell me that. But, you know, it turns out I'm being set up. She says, do you know if Allen is playing tomorrow? And I said, you know, no, Betts. Like, come on. You know that I wouldn't know that. Come on. And she says, well, he is. His dad just told me.
Right. Man, that's awesome.
His dad is at this bar and, you know, buying beers for everybody or something. And, you know, he's playing. He's playing.
Yeah. Oh, what a moment that's got to be.
For him?
I mean, yeah, for him. I mean, your sister maybe too, right? But or you know, any fan that gets to meet Josh Allen's dad. But like your kid's in the NFL. He's playing this road game. You're in a bar with all the fans. Like, what a
hey, look, that could be you in like 3 years.
It's got to be a damn riot. Oh, just slow down. I just love. Yeah, okay. I love the idea of that. I mean, it's just such a cool thing. Such a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have. I've got those two Foxborough games, and that is it for me. Never. I just never got it in me to like travel to really any other road games.
Yeah, it's kind of tough for us now.
Yeah, it has been for a while. So I mean, that's my excuse, I guess. You know, it's work, but I'd like to do that sometime. You know, like.
Well, in the 80s, I mean, I love being able to watch all the games at once. Like, I don't love going to the stadium so much as just kind of my setup, computer, TVs, everything like that, the remote. And, you know, in 1988, 1989, come on, you had the 10-minute ticker on NBC at the bottom of the screen. Oh, the Jets scored a field goal. Like, you have no way of getting information on any other game. So
you weren't really missing anything.
No, back then. Yeah, back then. Let's go. Let's go. Let's get in the car. We'll take a timeout here. The Sabres open tomorrow night, pregame at 6, Montreal at Buffalo 7:05, or there shortly thereafter, if there's like the intros and everything like that. You're gonna need the intros. We'll talk about the roster a little bit here as we go. Sal will join us at 5 and Paul at 6. Lines are open for you, 803-0550. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And I just want to say this, coming into this game, I wasn't skeptical about the Bills' defense, but I thought the competition was relevant.
Yeah.
And it made me question, okay, is this really an elite unit? I don't question that anymore. I think this is one of the best defenses in the NFL.
Mina Kimes of ESPN right there. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, 803-0550, our number. Look forward to getting connected with our fans. Brought to you by Bond, Schenick & King, a full-service Buffalo law firm. Here's John with us. Hello, John.
Hey, guys. I called last year on the Wednesday before the championship game, and I told you guys the story about how my dad brought me to Arrowhead, and then I went to the championship game in Buffalo and then down to Atlanta for the Super Bowl, and he left me out there with the sign, father and son, you know, whatever, $500. That's what we got. You guys got a kick out of it. I don't know if you remember.
Yes.
Anyway, as someone who's been in a game in Kansas City before, I know I was that young, but it was intense. I mean, I described you guys the national anthem and how they all scream Chiefs instead of Braves, and it's a wild atmosphere. There's people that are obviously tailgating from 7 in the morning up until 1 o'clock kickoff, just like we do, and, you know, they love their Chiefs just like we love our Bills. I will say this. I moved to South Carolina in April, and I've been living here in Lexington outside of Columbia for the past 7 or 8 months, and I have never been one to wear Bills gear. I just always saw it in Buffalo everywhere I looked, and I had a hat growing up every now and then, or like maybe your jersey every now and then, but I never really had any Bills gear growing up. I always like went for other like hockey teams or whatever. But as soon as I came down here, I thought that it was going to be very practical and wise to put decals on my car and get a nice new era hat at Lids in the mall as soon as I got down here to just represent. I felt that it was necessary. Definitely a pride thing, like you just described earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find coolest about living somewhere else for these last 7 months, because I've always lived in Buffalo, is when I wear my Bills hat, whether it's to the grocery store or filling up gas or on my way to work, you know, I got the license plate going on. I get beeps, you know, constantly stopped while grocery shopping. And you get to learn people's stories about, you know, now living down here that are from Buffalo. And there is a big Bills Western New York population down here in South Carolina. I know it exists in North Carolina, certainly in Florida. There's a lot of people I know down here that I've talked to that are going to this game on Monday. I unfortunately cannot go due to work, but living down here in South Carolina it could not be more different than Buffalo, and I do miss it a lot, and I will be back in a few months, but there are a lot of Bills fans right now that love talking about their Bills, and it drives all of these Gamecock fans down here absolutely crazy because none of them know anything about the NFL. All they care about is college football. But one point I wanted to make about Sean McDermott, this guy has been, I think, the key to this whole thing. Of course, quarterback is the most important position, and the quarterback is more important than the coach. I'm not going to say that he's not, but Sean McDermott, and I think the level of sort of a calmness that he brings about to the locker room, the message he sends, you know, he just keeps pounding this humble and hungry thing. And does it sound a little corny? Yeah, it does. But after a while, after like a few years of these Bills that have been on the roster for this long, I think they have bought into it, and you can see it. You can see it in the way that they conduct themselves in the post-game interviews, the way that they conduct themselves on the field. Even new arrivals who are meeting Bills that have been on the team probably for the last couple years are probably certainly affected by it. And I can't say enough about our coach and how comfortable I am with him leading our football team, the decisions that he's making on and off the field. And I really do believe that he's going to be the guy under the helm when we get our first Super Bowl ring. I'll listen to what you guys have to say, and go Bills.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, man, excellent. There's a lot to unpack there. I do, you know, you Mike, are, I'm circling all the way back to the beginning of that call. It was a few minutes ago now. But you're better at remembering specific callers than I am over the years. It's just, I don't know if it's what it says about my personality. Maybe it's you're the one who says their names when we're together, and I don't sometimes even ask you, like, what was that guy's name, mm-hmm. if I want to say something directly to him. But I do remember this story with him standing there with the sign outside of the Super Bowl. And the what he's describing, you know, being a fan and suddenly feeling compelled to have a hat or some gear, like fly the flag, I would say, when you're living somewhere else, is there's a I don't know if it's not necessarily a powerful moving. You want to be kind of, it makes you a bigger fan when you can't be there to touch it, I think. And I experienced that for me. I've said many times I became the fan of the Bills. Like, I don't think that I would be doing this job with you for all these years if I hadn't moved away when I did. I mean, yes, moving away lit the fire for sports talk radio by listening to WFAN in New York, but it also made me really into the Bills. Like, it coincided with the Bills winning that division in 88 and getting good and going to that first Super Bowl I still was not home for. And it drew me closer to the team, even though I was, you know, 500 miles away. And I think there's a power in that, that feels good. It makes you connect with your family and your friends in a way that you kind of take for granted when you're here, because it's just all around us. And, you know, you don't need to really do anything to partake. It's just there, you know. Walk out your door, it's there. And whereas when you're in South Carolina, like John is, you got to work a little, and then people can find you. And you can build a little community, if you want, of fans that you can go out and enjoy the games with. And it's a really cool thing, I think.
Yeah, and it's also happens to be, I think, probably for you as well, one of the best things about this job, too, is, like, now, we talked before about your story about forgetting tickets, and that used to mean driving back home to get them. And now you don't even think about it because they're just on your phone all the time or something. And, you know, also in those days, how were you going to follow your favorite team if you didn't live in the market? Like, you didn't get the paper from that team's coverage, mm-hmm. with that team's coverage in it. You didn't have the radio. There really weren't radio shows like this everywhere like there are now. But that piece, all the different, the local sports on TV, even maybe, you didn't have access to any of that. There was no way to reach that, to get that. Right. So now, I mean, we are always hearing from fans who call in or write in to say, like, I've listened from wherever. I mean, even around the world. And that's just really, really cool to think about. So thank you, John. I mean, Sean McDermott deserves the credit he gets. It's more Daboll for me. Because Daboll unlocked Allen's potential kind of suddenly and spectacularly. And I just think, like, he is such an integral part of all of this. It can't be overstated. Like, he is the guy who turned Allen with Allen's part, himself, of course, the way that they have built the offense, and that's McDermott for his part. You know, you're talking about messages and, you know, people say culture, things like that. Fine. Bean with Diggs and the different wide receivers. I talked about this again yesterday, just how keen the players, the right choices have been made at receiver, and I suppose overall. But man, if they didn't structure this offense the way they've done it to play into Allen's massive physical strengths. Really interesting how that happened and what they did to become a team that's just almost unstoppable from whatever you'd want to describe, even when they were in the playoffs 2 years ago, where they were just getting by and good enough to make a wild card. Now you've got a Super Bowl favorite sitting here, and I feel like he deserves maybe more credit than anybody else, because that just didn't seem to people in football, not all of them, but many, it seemed like a job that was possible.
Yeah. And, like, yeah, maybe if you know, it might be too much to just give McDermott credit for getting out of Daboll's way on offense. But, I think Daboll has gotten, and hopefully for his sake, not ours, not for the Bills' sake, he gets a head coaching job out of it at some point here because it's been outstanding. I think they're planning, like, Bean was quoted in a long piece that I saw before the season began about the Diggs acquisition. And I'm trying to remember if I even referenced this once before or not. But in telling the story about going to get Diggs, it's the piece in which Diggs is quoted also. Forgive me, I do not remember the outlet where it was written. But Diggs talked pretty candidly about, like, you know, whether it was his immaturity or whatever it was, like, you know, it was fine until it wasn't, you know, in Minnesota and all that. It, contained within that piece is Bean saying to the effect, something to the effect of, well, we weren't worried about his reputation. We knew we were going to throw the ball like crazy. And we wanted to get him for that reason. Like, we weren't worried. Remember us all worrying, like, you know, March of 2020 when this trade happens, like, is this guy going to be happy here? You know, is Allen going to be able to be, you know, find him enough? Are they going to feed him enough? And I think the reason I bring up Bean saying that in that piece is that it tells you that they didn't just, like, get to training camp and realize Josh Allen was going to be, you know, the, you know, I don't know what they had their hopes set on or what they thought his ceiling was, but they were going to become an offense that threw the ball around. And they needed Diggs to, like, sort of set it off. And that takes planning. You know, like, that they didn't just, oh, let's go get Stephon Diggs. Well, I guess we'll throw it a lot. You know, and I don't know if the quote could be being, like, you know, giving themselves credit for, you know, having the vision here. But I buy it. You know, I think they knew what they had in Allen and planned for it and went and got Diggs to do it. And so, like, Bean, to me, gets a lot of credit, too.
Sure.
For pulling that off. And, you know, them all together recognizing if we're going to be a power, if we're going to beat that team in Kansas City, we're going to have to do something like this. So let's do it. First round pick, let's go. And they went and they did it. And it, you know, it obviously has paid off.
And, which I think is maybe equally important in that, is that Bean had to get Minnesota to say yes. Like, you can't just – I bet lots of GMs have lots of big ideas.
Yeah.
But he had to get Minnesota to say yes. Now, they could have not made that trade and maybe picked Justin Jefferson like the Vikings and been the same team. I don't know. Jefferson is super good. But we did great. And, yeah, all of that. Plus making the deal. That's my favorite part. You still have to get it done. So, lots to like. 803-0550, the number. Thanks again, John. Getting connected with our fans, brought to you by Bond, Schenick, and King, a full-service Buffalo law firm. Sal Capaccio checks in 20 minutes. Paul Hamilton later, as the Sabres open tomorrow night. Several games in the league tonight, including Montreal at Toronto. Montreal will be here tomorrow. So here's a chance, Bulldog. You're playing
back-to-backs.
A team on a back-to-back. And Price is even with them.
What?
Price isn't even with them, is he?
No, Price. I thought you said is with them, and I
no,
like,
no, no,
no, no. Yeah, he's gone for like a month. He player, the league player assistance program. He's gone. So yeah, Allen will be in goal for them tonight, I imagine.
All right, timeout here. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog. WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, y'all know it's Hoagie Hump Day, and that means you should tweet us at WGR550 and use the hashtag Hoagie Hump Day for a chance to win a $25 gift card to Jim's Steakout. Jim's Steakout, celebrating 40 years of mouthwatering hoagies and chicken finger subs.
Welcome back, everybody. Sal Capaccio coming up just after 5. Let's go to Tom with us now. Hi, Tom.
Hey, good afternoon. I got a question. I'm from West Seneca. I got a question about maybe Brian Daboll going to Vegas Raiders next year. And what about Ken Dorsey possibly being our offense coordinator? What do you think about that? And I'm going to hang up and listen to you. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I mean, Daboll should be a head coach somewhere. He probably should be now. Look at some of these guys.
Yeah. Right.
Like, yep. He should be already, probably. I mean, as I was just saying, I think he deserves worlds of credit for what has happened here, maybe more than anybody else. But I think as I said many times before this happened, I didn't see it in his career anywhere. You know, that's a great thing about sports. Allen has this to talk about or to sort of have, and so does Daboll, that neither guy had really... Well, they're different situations, but Daboll specifically had never just like had a great offense, and he replaced Dennison, and like, okay, well, anything can work. You know, that's just always the best I could do in my mind for this is like, well, anything could work, but I wasn't optimistic about it. And really that doesn't matter. He's done an amazing job here and he deserves that opportunity. He's already deserved it. As far as Dorsey goes, I don't have any particular opinion on that. If you get there, you're going to want somebody to just try to keep it going. And
you're right.
Whether
so,
the concepts and everything like that, you know, whoever that is, you'd want somebody to further that.
Yeah, I think that's the most appealing. Again, no slight on Dorsey, but I don't have a very strong opinion positively or negatively about the Bills quarterbacks coach. Like everyone else on the staff, everything's going great, so don't change anything. And with that in mind, yeah, I think the preference would be, do you got a guy here who is watching what's working and knows what's working and will know how to keep that going, you know, or is he going to want to, like, you know, put his own stamp on it, so to speak? Because, you know, there is ego here, right? I mean, what's his ultimate goal? Is his ultimate goal to get where Sean McDermott is and where Brian Daboll may be going that could open up the opportunity for him? Well, you don't get a whole ton of credit usually if all you're doing is using the same stuff the other guy was using. So you got to be careful, assuming that it'll be that. But I would think the Bills would be very careful about who they – I mean, I think they're almost always very careful about it. But in this case in particular, you're going to want to hear the right things from this candidate about what is working and what you know, can you do anything to make it better? And what's the possibility of that making it worse? Like, I think you just got – you want to get it right. You know, you got a good thing going here, and but it's not bulletproof. You know, you've got – a coordinator that seems to really know what works for this quarterback. And, you know, that's not something that's impossible for someone else to discern. And hopefully being in the room, so to speak, like Dorsey is right now, would give him like a leg up in that department. But whoever they hire, to me, is, you know, it's going to matter a lot. You're not going to want to lose anything because they're humming here. And as we saw this week, and if you read about it, you know, they're always evolving, right? I mean, and there was a lot different about what they did on Sunday night against the Chiefs than what they had done prior against the Chiefs, and even what they had done in the four games before the fifth game on Sunday night.
Quick other thing before we bring Sal on. How are you with no turn on red generally? Are you like 100% I will never turn right in this situation, or sometimes do you turn right on red when it says no turn on red?
I survey the situation.
You want me to take the question anonymously somehow, or are you willing to?
I survey the situation and ascertain if I can safely complete my right turn on red, even though the sign says not to.
You leave it up to yourself to decide if you're above the law.
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That surprises
and
me.
And it is not something, I mean, I'm in the city. Those signs are all over my neighborhood.
Well, they're there for a reason, though.
I know. They're there because there's schools there. And when there's no children in the crosswalk, I feel like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and just do it. Look, if I get busted, I'm not going to complain.
Nope, that's
right. I'm not going to go to court and fight it. I'm going to go, okay, I deserve this. But
that's right.
I would say I pretty regularly turn right on red in the, say, like, no right on red 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. or whatever the time slot is. I turn red a few times a week.
You turn right in that situation. Okay, I was in one right today where I was fourth in line to turn right, and this is a no turn on red sign, and the three cars in front of me all did. Mm-hmm. I'm like, there is no way I'm turning. And I had a guy behind me, and I looked to see
pressure.
If I'm going to get. Yeah, there's pressure. Like, you know, maybe there can always be that pressure in your mind because maybe somebody doesn't see the sign and they're expecting you to turn right on red because that's what normally you do. So the three cars, I wonder if the second car went because the first one did. Did that make it okay? Did that make it okay? Then the third guy went because the second guy and the first. Is that how that's supposed to work? All right, It's your life. I'm not doing it. I'm going to stay right here because that's what the sign says. So if anybody is listening that was behind me today.
I respect that.
That was you.
I mean, I do. I respect following the rules.
Do you?
I'm admitting to you that I frequently do not follow that rule.
Well, I appreciate the honesty.
I tend to look at it. Here. Let me give you a speech. I tend to look at it as though I'm easing the flow of traffic.
Okay.
Because I can safely make that turn. I understand why it's there. I'm not being reckless. I understand that there will be you know, a price to be paid if I am caught doing this. And I understand that. And I can live with that. But to me, I'm helping move rush hour along if I make that turn. Because now you can decide whether you want to do this or not, person who's stacked up in this school traffic. And, you know, you make your own call. But I'm going to let you decide.
The sign doesn't say try not to turn on red.
No, it really doesn't. No, I'm admitting that I'm brazenly breaking the law.
You think you have it figured out on a level at which the government doesn't. You think you have it? You are helping in a way that apparently the bureaucracy around us has decided that no, it's not worth it.
I think that I am to be trusted.
Okay. Generally, I would say that about you.
Mike, I've done my research.
You've done your research. I'm still doing mine. Sal Capaccio next on WGR.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.